What is going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Saturday Morning Slam Masters. I am your host, Ryan, a.k.a. Mr. Showtime, a.k.a. Ryan Retro. And today's episode is a classic pay-per-view review, SummerSlam 1996 from Cleveland, Ohio, the Gund Arena, estimated attendance 17,000 fans. This is my very first pro wrestling event, period. It's one that is held fondly in my heart. I know it's, I believe to this day, the lowest, or one of the lowest buy rates in SummerSlam history. But for me, 12-year-old or 11-year-old Ryan, it was definitely a spectacle. I remember the lead up going into this with Shawn Michaels as the WWF champion, pretty much going against the stable, if you will, of Camp Cornette, team of Vader, Owen Hart, and the British Bulldog. At the time, Shawn was teaming up with Ahmed Johnson, and wow, just crazy how far he fell. He was one of my favorites as well. And at the time, it was originally going to be a six-man tag team match at the July pay-per-view, the International Incident in Your House event. It was going to be Camp Cornette taking on Shawn Michaels, the Ultimate Warrior, and Ahmed Johnson. But with the Ultimate Warrior no showing multiple events, he was legitimately suspended from the WWF. That would be the last time we see the Ultimate Warrior until his Hall of Fame induction. So in this storyline, he was replaced by Psycho Sid, coming back as a babyface. So that was actually something we haven't seen since the early days of the Hulk Hogan era. So this was going into the event. It was Shawn Michaels defending against Vader. We also had Psycho Sid taking on the British Bulldog. There was an advertised match for Ahmed Johnson, who was at the time the Intercontinental Champion, defending against Farouk. Farouk just recently made his debut, wearing his goofy headgear. He made a debut attacking Ahmed Johnson on an episode of Monday Night Raw, but legitimately accidentally kicked him a little too hard in the kidney. And Ahmed Johnson was legitimately injured, had to have emergency surgery on that kidney, therefore vacating the Intercontinental Championship, and this match was canceled. 11-year-old Ryan was so, so disappointed. Other matches on this card was the famed, or probably panned, boiler room brawl between The Undertaker and Mankind. I tell you what, I ate this matchup. Undertaker was my favorite at the time. I loved all the spooky, goofy, over-the-top characters. Mankind was just, you know, he was like the ultimate bad guy, you know? And he was like the only guy that could beat The Undertaker at the time. So I was just enamored with this match, but it was not that great watching it back. Other matches we had, Jake the Snake Roberts taking on Jerry the King Lawler. They were in a feud with Jerry Lawler, bringing up Jake's alcoholism. Really uncomfortable watching that back now. WWE is notorious for bringing personal issues and turning them into storylines. Just look at the whole Matt Hardy situation, Jeff Hardy situations. Watching it back, it wasn't really comfortable. And then we also had a tag team championship match with the Smoking Guns defending against the New Rockers and the Godwins, as well as the Body Donnas. And then I don't want to say it was really a throwaway match, but this match was really just kind of thrown together. But it was Savio Vega taking on Owen Hart. I believe that is everything for this card. It wasn't a really big card. There wasn't a lot of filler either. I watch it back and I want to say it was maybe barely 3 hours, maybe under 3 hours. But it was a fun card to me, and I'm going to go over the matches here momentarily. Before we get into that, I do want to touch a little bit on the pre-show. At the time, the WWF was doing what was called the free-for-all. And it's the equivalent of the pre-show, except for the difference between that is that the WWF actually showed matches, bonus matches at that time. This free-for-all or pre-show was always shown for free, as it says in the title. And it would be on the pay-per-view channels or be on the preview channel, the TV Guide channel, for those who are old enough to remember. And it was kind of like the WWF's last-ditch effort to get you to actually purchase the pay-per-view. So it would show some pre-show matches, one or two matches. On this particular show, they were doing what was called the Bikini Beach Blast-Off. And they really hyped it up, but it was really nothing. It was just a backstage segment with like a small pool and a small like beach setup, and you got to see some of the superstars there kind of just partying and hanging out. You got to see Sable and Sunny and Marlena, so that was great for the guys. And but nothing really came of it. It was just wrestlers hanging out backstage. That's really all it was. There was one match on this pre-show, and it was Yokozuna taking on Stone Cold Steve Austin. And this was literally the first match I ever saw, so I got to see Stone Cold Steve Austin in my very first match. And this match was very short. It's notorious for Yokozuna going for the Banzai drop to Steve Austin and being quote-unquote so heavy that he pulled the ring rope out of the turnbuckle. And he falls to his back, Steve Austin gets the pin, really just playing on the, you know, Yokozuna's weight. It was something, you know. Wasn't that great, you know. At this point, Stone Cold had just won the King of the Ring, so it was gaining some momentum, but he really wasn't at that point of superstardom. That wouldn't really happen until the November Survivor Series, when he took on Bret the Hitman Hart. Our first official match of the night is going to be Savio Vega taking on Owen Hart. This is the pre-Los Boricuas Savio Vega, pre-Nation of Domination Savio Vega. I like to refer to this as Razor Ramon's buddy, Savio Vega. I was actually a really big fan of him. Again, you know, I'm 11 years old, so I love all the good guys for the most part. And I really liked his style, especially with his kicks and everything. And he just had it brought a really cool energy. Always love Savio Vega. Shout out to Savio Vega for showing up at Backlash this year, too. He was taking on Owen Hart. Owen Hart was doing the Cowboy Bob Orton gimmick at the time. He had an injured wrist, so he had the a cast on, which he was leaving on a little too long. And he would notoriously use that cast to hit his opponents and gain shady victories. This match, I don't really remember any kind of build-up between it at all. And in fact, like, until I watched this pay-per-view back, I actually forgot this match happened, period. So really cool seeing Owen Hart, you know, just knowing that I got to see him live in my first show ever. It's kind of, you know, a privilege in my book. But this was a really fun match, a real quick match, but a lot of back and forth. They were, you know, announcers really kind of hype in the main event, so that's the part that kind of sucked a little bit. They didn't really invest themselves too much in the match, but then again, there wasn't really any build-up for this match. Savio Vega at the end of the match gets the advantage. There is a little bit of a referee distraction, a referee bump. Owen Hart takes the cast off his arm completely, nails Savio Vega in the head, and then proceeds to put Savio Vega in the sharpshooter. Referee checks on Savio Vega, and he is out cold, calls the match. Owen Hart wins. Fun match just watching back, especially if you're an Owen Hart fan. You gotta love his shenanigans. So Camp Cornette with one win tonight for SummerSlam 1996. We're gonna see how it goes. Our next match is gonna see the WWF Tag Team Championships on the line in a four-way match. We have the defending champions, the Smoking Guns, team of Billy and Bart, accompanied to the ring by Sonny, defending against the Godwins and the New Rockers. The New Rockers being the team of Marty Jannetty and Leave Cassidy, the future Al Snow. And then also the Body Donnas. Sonny really being the X Factor with all these teams, minus the Rockers. She had spent time with debuting with the Body Donnas, turned on them, joined the Smoking Guns. There was a point where it looked like she turned on the Smoking Guns and joined the Godwins and then turned on them. So Sonny was really the X Factor in this match. But this was a fun and, I don't want to say quick, fatal four-way, but The finishes were kind of lame. Going into this match, Skip was injured. I believe he had a... I don't want to say he broke his neck, but he hurt his neck on a house show. He actually wrestled the match with a neck brace on. Or maybe it was Zip. I can't remember exactly who was the... Who was the injured member of the Body Donnas, but the injured member really didn't do much. They were eliminated first, and going a little bit further, the New Rockers were eliminated by the Godwins, hit the slop drop, aka the Scorpion Death Drop. Finish comes when Phineas Godwin hits the slop drop on Billy Gunn. Referee's back is turned, and then Bart Gunn does like a flying nothing, a flying elbow or flying just jump on the back of Phineas's neck while he's trying to pin Billy Gunn. And then that's going to do it. Billy Gunn is going to roll over and pin Phineas Godwin. The Smoking Guns retain. It was kind of a mess of a match, but Emil, it was what it was. After the match, Sonny does get on the microphone and talks to the Cleveland audience, talking down to all the women and trying to just get that little extra heat for the team. She eventually hits some kind of apparatus, and a giant banner of Sonny drops from the ceiling, and she was telling all the women in Cleveland that that is what a real woman looks like. Yeah, it was fun. Some takeaways from here is that at the point, I only knew who the New Rockers were. I didn't know that Marty Jannetty was the former tag team partner of Shawn Michaels. So this was just like a random team to me. Did not know anything about Sonny's real life relationship with Chris Candido, aka Skip from the Body Donnas. And, I just wasn't really interested in any of these teams as a kid. They just all seemed kind of corny, and that's going, that's coming from an 11-year-old kid. And I just really didn't buy. This is during the days where, you look on the other channel and you got WCW, you got teams like the Steiners, and you got the Road Warriors, and you had the NWO with the Outsiders, and it just seemed like those were the real tag teams, and this was just kind of just thrown together nonsense on the WWF side. And unfortunately, to this day, WWF does still kind of struggle with their tag team division, with actual tag teams rather than just wrestler A and wrestler B being thrown together. But this match, was what it was. It was quick, but wasn't really my cup of tea. Up next, we get a match between Psycho Sid and the British Bulldog. I believe this is the order of the matches of the night, so I gotta apologize if I'm kind of off here. Of course, I mentioned earlier that Psycho Sid had returned to help out Ahmed Johnson and Shawn Michaels in the ongoing feud/war with Camp Cornette. And the rumor is that this match was originally supposed to be the Ultimate Warrior going against the British Bulldog. I believe that local advertisements here in Cleveland were actually still advertising the Ultimate Warrior and British Bulldog. I actually would have really liked to see that match as a kid. I don't know if the match quality would have been that great, but, with Sid, I don't think it was going to be that much better either. And that's not a knock on Sid, it's just Sid had a very slow, methodical pace, and Bulldog was a powerhouse. So it's just, sometimes styles clash, no pun intended. But this was a decent match. Again, because it was Camp Cornette, the commentators were, again, just hyping the main event, kept talking about Vader. I believe they, at some point, cut away from Vader, or cut away to Vader training in the back. One thing I forgot to mention, too, is that at the time, Clarence Mason, manager of in the WWF, was also managing the British Bulldog and Owen Hart, and he was like a semi-member of Camp Cornette. Just like an extra manager, almost completely forgot about Clarence Mason. This match was just your average punch, kick, Irish whip, back and forth. The Bulldog did get to show some power against the Psycho Sid. The finish comes with Psycho Sid hitting the choke slam and a powerbomb on the British Bulldog, getting a clean win. No real follow-up to this after. It was just, okay, we got the good guy against the bad guy. Good guy wins. You know, I would have loved to have seen like a good feud between the Bulldog and Psycho Sid, but from here then we go into the tag team of Owen Hart and British Bulldog, and they pretty much dominate the tag team scene from here on out. One match that I totally forgot about, I believe this is the spot or the night, was Goldust taking on the Wild Man Mark Merrow. Now, there was a little bit of buildup with this, with Goldust having somewhat of a relationship with Mankind. They were a little bit of a team, and Mankind would kind of mess with Sable here and there. He kept calling her mommy, which was just it was just creepy. But this match was it was fun. Wildman debuts a little bit newer of a look, kind of a tribute to his Johnny B. Bad days back in WCW. And this one I don't remember too much of. Watching it back, it was a decent match. This match is notorious for Mark Merrow debuting the Wild Thing finisher, also known as the Shooting Star Press. Ironically, you know, for a match where he debuts a finisher, he ends up losing the match. And I really thought that at this point, if you're going to debut this new finisher, if you're hyping it up, and the thing is, he actually hit it, so there was no no shenanigans. But eventually, Goldust does get the advantage back, hits the curtain call on Mark Merrow and gets the win. You know, as a kid, I guess I didn't really think too much of it, but like as an adult and after watching years of pro wrestling, I really thought that this match could have been, you know, just a little bit longer, maybe put a little bit more story into it. Going, you know, a follow-up from here, knowing that Ahmed Johnson had to vacate the Intercontinental Championship, I don't think it was officially announced at this time. Had it been, maybe we would have been able to build these two guys up going into the tournament. And now that I think about it, I believe later in the show they did officially announce that there was going to be a tournament for the Intercontinental Championship. I'll have to watch it back again, possibly. I don't know. But it was very shortly after this that the tournament did start, which was eventually won by Mark Merrow. So it would have been kind of cool to maybe get that announcement at the beginning of the show that the Intercontinental Championship tournament's going to be coming up and that these two guys are going to be in the tournament. I believe Goldust was in it. And it would have been a real cool way to at least put something on the line. It would have been cool to make this like a qualifying match too. But again, Goldust gets the win. Love the over-the-top characters. I did enjoy Mark Merrow back in the day. But really wish he would have gotten the win, especially with hitting that Wild Thing. Our next match is going to be Jerry the King Lawler taking on Jake the Snake Roberts. Before we get into that, there wasn't a quick in-ring promo with Farouk and Sonny, and I believe this is just coming off the heels of the announcement of the Ahmed Johnson injury. Obviously, that match did not take place this night. But it would have been nice to get like another replacement match, like someone going against Farouk. But it was just, to me, you know, watching it back, it was a little bit of filler. But, you know, Farouk also being in that Intercontinental Championship tournament, it was nice to have a little bit of hype for him and some explanation as to why we were not getting that match with him and Ahmed Johnson for that IC title. But going into this match here with Jerry the King Lawler and Jake the Snake Roberts, it has been an ongoing feud with Jake the Snake Roberts and Jerry Lawler, with Jerry Lawler constantly bringing up Jake's alcoholism and substance abuse, and they turned it into a storyline. At this point, Jake was in the Born Again gimmick, I guess you can call it. You know, he came back to the WWF and was very, you know, saying he was clean and he found God and this and that. Jake the Snake coming off of the King of the Ring finals, losing in the finals to Stone Cold Steve Austin. He was like the sentimental favorite going in. At least that's how they try to book him. But the one thing about Jerry Lawler is he knows how to get heat. And he comes to the ring with a Baltimore Ravens jersey. At the time, the Cleveland Browns had been moved to Baltimore. And Art Modell, the owner at the time, was probably one of the most hated men, if not the most hated man in Cleveland. So, of course, Jerry Lawler getting that extra heat wearing that Ravens jersey. Jerry Lawler is actually did live in the Cleveland area for quite a while. He's notorious for being a Cleveland sports fan, Cleveland Indians / Guardians, Browns, Cavs. Throws out the first pitch at the ball games. You see him at the Browns games all the time. But this was just a real funny way for him to get some heat. And of course, he's telling some jokes at Jake Roberts' expense. This match was extremely short. Jake Roberts trying to get the DDT on Jerry Lawler. Jerry Lawler eventually has a bottle of Jim Beam and hits Jake Roberts in the throat and then just pins him, pulls the tights and pins him. So super lame finish in my pick. But after the match, that's really what the story was, where Jerry Lawler was pouring the alcohol like down Jake's throat and pouring it all over him. And from here, we get Mark Henry, who just recently made his debut, comes in to save Jake Roberts. And we are eventually going to be getting Mark Henry's pay-per-view debut the next month at In Your House Mind Games against Jerry Lawler. And it was kind of cool. I was really big into the whole Mark Henry thing. They really hyped him up pretty good of being the world's strongest man, coming off the whole Olympics from 1996. And it was... The ending was all right, as far as like the run-in and the save from Mark Henry, but the match itself was kind of garbage. It was really just a throwaway match. It was a comedy match. It was a way for Jerry Lawler to get heat. That's all I can say about that. Up next, we have our semi-main event, and this was the match that 11-year-old Ryan was there for. This is the Boiler Room Brawl between The Undertaker and Mankind. Leading into this match, The Undertaker had been coming off of the WrestleMania win over Diesel. The next night, Mankind debuts, and then later on in the night, attacks The Undertaker, puts him in the mandible claw, and that's how we go off the Raw after WrestleMania. From here, they feud going all the way to the King of the Ring, where Mankind gets the win over The Undertaker. The Undertaker fights Goldust at the July pay-per-view. Mankind interferes. That's where they pull each other down to the ring. They the whole come up from the bottom of the ring gimmick. And at that pay-per-view, they begin fighting in the boiler room. At this point, I had no idea what a boiler room was. It just sounded gross. And they really went away and just made it look like what it was. If anybody's not familiar with what a boiler room is, it's just like the maintenance room, or like the basement area, if you will, of the of an arena. At this point, the Undertaker will go ahead and enter the boiler room. The match starts in the boiler room. The whole point of the match is to start in the boiler room, and the match ends in the ring, where the winner is the person to obtained the urn from Paul Bearer. Quick note on this match is that this is pre-Titantron days. So what they literally did is the WWF would wheel these not-so-giant television sets, like the ones you would see if you were in high school, and they would wheel like the TV set on the little rollers. and they brought these TV sets out for people in the front row to go ahead and watch the pre-taped backstage segments, which was the start of the Boiler Room Brawl. And after that, I'm thinking, like, how can you actually see what's going on if you're all trying to watch this small TV? Now, luckily, I was in the nosebleed, so I got to see what was going on the Jumbotron, or what do you want to call it, like the scoreboard above the arena. But if you were, like, in a decent spot for, you know, your seats that night, you were not going to be able to see what was going on in that boiler room. But the match starts with The Undertaker entering the boiler room. It's just like the equivalent of your backstage hardcore match. They're hitting each other with pipes and jumping off of scaffolding. And Mankind did take a bump falling off of a ladder or off of scaffolding. And Mick Foley did injure his, I believe it's his sciatic nerve. And that messed him up for a few months. I believe he wrote that in his book. They worked their way to the ring. I will say this, a lot of people don't give this match a lot of credit, but I will say that at least for the hardcore portion, it was kind of fun. You didn't really see stuff like this at 1996. So it was kind of cool seeing The Undertaker kind of let loose and just beat the shit out of Mankind with anything he can get his hands on. Even to the point where they're throwing hot coffee at each other. So that was definitely something. They fight their way to the ring. There was a nasty spot where Mankind pulled the ring mat off, or the mat off the flooring. And he goes to get in the ring. Undertaker kind of slingshots him off the ring. And Mick Foley hits that concrete hard as hell, back first. At this point, Undertaker gets into the ring. And it looks like he is about to win. He's doing the pose to be presented with the urn. Paul Bearer then turns his back. So you kind of know something's up. And then Mankind puts the mandible claw on the Undertaker. And Paul Bearer eventually hits the Undertaker with the urn, presents the urn to Mankind. Mankind wins the match, and 11-year-old Ryan is just devastated. Not only did the Undertaker lose, but Paul Bearer turned his back on him. You know, it's my very first event, and I get to see, like, this crazy angle take place, and this crazy turn, and you know, to this day, I kind of think about it, like, that was kind of cool. The lights eventually go out, and the Druids come to the ring, carry the Undertaker away, the lifeless body of the Undertaker. Don't worry, everybody, he'll be back the next night. This match was, it was fun for me. I'm partial to it, but I enjoyed it. It's main event time, and the main event is the WWE Championship. It's the champion Shawn Michaels defending against the Mastodon, the Big Van Vader. I can't remember all the gimmick names that they gave Vader, but God, man, he was definitely, to me, he was scary. And I remember seeing him briefly in WCW. You gotta remember, I'm a WWF kid. At the time, I just started watching WCW. Really just started watching wrestling in general that summer. So Vader was definitely, like, the big bad guy, you know, especially going against Shawn Michaels. So that was, like, the whole David versus Goliath situation. Shawn Michaels is notorious in this match for going off script, and we'll kind of get to that going forward. But at the previous pay-per-view, just a little bit of backstory, I mentioned before, there was that six-man tag with Cam Cornette taking on Shawn Michaels, Psycho Sid, and Ahmed Johnson. At that match, Vader did get the clean pin on Shawn Michaels after hitting the Vader bomb. So really going into this, you see, like, okay, Shawn Michaels can be beat, and Vader is a guy that can beat him. So they try to really hype that up. This was, for me, a fun match. Shawn Michaels, you know, as much as they say that the styles clashed with Shawn Michaels' style and Vader, They really did put on a good show. Vader kind of countering a lot of Sean's moves, but then Sean using his speed and his agility to try to take Vader out. Saw a lot of cool planches. They still show this clip to this day with Shawn Michaels doing a leap over the top rope to the outside of Vader. The match, to my knowledge, was originally supposed to end in a non-finish. For this match to end in either a countout or a disqualification, with Vader eventually getting his rematch at Survivor Series, taking the title from Shawn Michaels, and then dropping it to him in San Antonio at the 97 Royal Rumble. That, of course, would not come to pass. During the match, Shawn Michaels did lose by countout, and at this point, Jim Cornette gets on the microphone and asks for the match to be restarted because Vader wants to win the championship. We get a little bit more shenanigans. I'm sorry, I'm trying to think of the way to put it. Match gets restarted. We get some shenanigans later on with Shawn Michaels going for the super kick and Jim Cornette grabbing the ankle of Shawn so he can't get out of the corner. Eventually, Shawn drags Jim Cornette into the ring, steals his trademark tennis racket, beats the crap out of him, and then starts hitting the crap out of Vader. Shawn Michaels loses again by disqualification. Now, knowing what I know now, I believe this was the original finish, but then the match was started again because Cornette asked for the match to be started again so Vader can actually pin Shawn Michaels to win. Later on in this, and after the match was restarted, Shawn goes to do a elbow off the top. I believe the spot was Vader was supposed to move and Shawn wouldn't miss the elbow. Vader did not move, which led to the infamous Shawn Michaels landing on his feet and just screaming at Vader and calling him names. And in the middle of the match, Shawn at the time was not the best person to be with and to be paired with and to work with. It's been said multiple times, and also by Shawn himself. So that I believe that is also what led to the whole change of this main event. It has been said that Shawn and Vader were working house shows leading up to this match, and Vader is known for being very stiff and being very rough in the ring. He's also known for being a big teddy bear too, but so you just kind of feel bad for the guy. But I believe Shawn, you know, went to management, did not want to work with Vader going forward. So instead of this program continuing, this was going to instead just be the blow off of the Vader and Shawn Michaels. I know they did like maybe one or two matches on Raw after that, but this match did not have the non-finish. So the match gets started again. Vader hits the powerbomb. Shawn kicks out. Shawn hits the sweet chin music. Vader kicks out. Vader goes for the moonsault, the Vader salt, misses. Shawn Michaels goes at the top, hits a moonsault to Vader, pins him, and he is still the WWF champion. That is how the show ends, with Shawn Michaels winning. And watching it back, too, I forgot that Shawn won with a moonsault, because at this point, it was pretty just paint by number. It was Shawn Michaels with the flying forearm, kip up, body slam, elbow, and sweet chin music, and that was it. And that is, you know, from Shawn Michaels, he would wrestle a lot as the champion, so he'd wrestle. That finish would be the same on Raw, it would be the same on Superstars, and pretty much every other match he had. So I kind of totally forgot that he won with the moonsault. But that was it. Shawn Michaels wins. I'm happy. I was a Shawn Michaels kid. Like, my two favorites were Shawn and The Undertaker. So I was definitely a run-of-the-mill front runner fan at that point. But you know, there's a part of me that really would love to have seen, as an adult, that non-finish and saw like a brawl to end this match, and then you can go into Mind Games the next month with Shawn defending against Mankind, and you can have Vader maybe winning like a number one contenders match, or because Vader did interfere in that main event against Shawn Michaels. So it would have been kind of cool to see that. I think Vader as the WWF champion would totally have worked. And another thing too is this was definitely pre-planned for Vader to win the title, because the December in Your House, the name of it was It's Time, which that was the whole thing, is it was it's Vader time. That was the whole thing with Vader. So it just seemed a little weird now in hindsight with Psycho Sid getting the title and wrestling at It's Time. Maybe they should have renamed it, I don't know. But yeah, I think it was definitely a missed opportunity with Shawn Michaels not being willing to work with Vader going forward. I would have loved to see Vader as a heel WWF champion, even if it just was for a few months leading into the Royal Rumble. That would have really made Vader, just that would have made him in the WWF. And again, just a missed opportunity. And that is going to do it for SummerSlam 1996. If I got to give it a rating, I can give it a 3 out of 5 stars. It was my first event, so it does hold a place in my heart. And I think like the strong points of this match were the main event, the Boiler Room Brawl, and the Owen Hart match. I really thought Owen and Savio tore it up. Everything else just seemed like filler. Even Bulldog and Sid, it just really seemed like a lot of stuff was thrown together for this match, or for this event. But it just, for the most part, I mean, it got the job done. It did finish the story with Shawn and Vader, which I wish it didn't. It did hype up the feud with Undertaker and Mankind, especially with the turn from Paul Bearer. And then, you know, we saw some good in-ring action with Owen Hart and Savio Vega. Again, this was not the most beloved SummerSlam event. It's probably one of the most hated or the most, you know, critically panned SummerSlam events. But, you know, to me, it was fun. So that's really all we have for today. Next week, we will be back with regular wrestling news, coming off of the World Heavyweight Championship tournament. We do now know that Seth Rollins and AJ Styles are going to be fighting at Night of Champions for the new World Heavyweight Championship. We know that Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa are going to be taking on Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens for the tag team titles. Really interested to see what happens with that Bloodline storyline. We also know that we're going to be getting the more debuts from the recently drafted stars to Raw and SmackDown. So a lot of cool stuff coming up. We also have coming up Memorial Day weekend, which is going to be such a busy weekend. On the 26th, we have Impact Wrestling Under Siege. Of course, we have SmackDown and Rampage on Friday. And then we have Night of Champions Saturday afternoon, followed by Sunday at AEW's Double or Nothing. So it's going to be a pretty busy-ass weekend, Memorial Day weekend for pro wrestling. So we're gonna have Jay on the show. And we're going to be reviewing Night of Champions like immediately after. We thought about maybe doing a watch-along, but that's I don't think that's going to happen. We're just going to like just hang out and watch the show, and we'll talk about the give our thoughts on it. And just very excited for the next few weeks of pro wrestling. Guys, if you have the heart and the love to go ahead and show us some love, you want to follow us online, you can follow us on Twitter at Saturday Show Pod, or Saturday Slam Show, or I'm sorry, Saturday Slam Pod. On Instagram, it is Saturday Slam Show. And if you want to follow me, I am the Ryan Retro on Twitter. I love to do my live tweets with Raw and SmackDown and AEW. Whenever I have a chance to watch any kind of pro wrestling, I love interacting with you guys. I love just having some fun. No negativity. Just if you like something, great. If you don't, just don't shit on it. So, but definitely looking forward to doing a live tweet this Monday night, and for the next few shows as well. So, I know I'm rambling at this point, but I want to make sure that I let you guys know what was going to be coming up. And I appreciate all the love, the listens, and the downloads, and all the interactions that you guys give us. And until next week, if you can be anything in the world, just remember, be kind.